Hello, and welcome to another episode of Brewing with Brewskies, a Magic the Gathering podcast about beer and brewing decks, and sometimes spoilers, and anything we want to talk about. Anyway, my name's Doug. I'm joined this week, as I am every week, by my co-host Sean.
Hello.
And do we have a good episode for you guys this week?
Absolutely not.
Damn it, Sean.
You asked.
Yeah. I'm a little bit on the sick side this week, so if you hear me mute randomly, it's because I'm dying over here. But don't worry about that. It's fine.
Only slowly.
Only slowly. Anyway, the first thing we should talk about is the sponsor, Flipside Gaming. Go over to flipsidegaming.com, and you can use our affiliate code, BWBMTG, to get 10% off orders of $10 or more. It's a good site. It's got competitive prices. It'll buy cards. It'll sell cards. They'll sell you other things that even aren't Magic related. You like board games? They got board games. Anything you'd like to add about them, Sean?
No, I think you covered it.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's move on to beers that we're drinking this week. Sean, what are you enjoying in the alcoholic beverage department?
I got a variety pack from Deschutes Brewery. So the two that I have in front of me right now are Mirror Pond Pale Ale and Black Butte Porter.
Excellent. Excellent. How are those?
I like so it also came with the fresh squeezed IPA in there, and I have to say I like the pale ale over the IPA just because it's a little more mild on the hoppiness.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a brewery from Oregon, and Oregon likes their hops, so.
Yeah, I've never had Deschutes, but it's something I should probably give a try.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really blown away by it. It's just kind of a normal pale ale, but, you know, it's not bad.
It's kind of something good to have on occasion, but you wouldn't really write home too much about it.
Right.
Yeah.
And the Black Butte Porter actually is a serviceable porter. It seems kind of watered down, but it is technically expired since it says drink by 9/1/17, so.
You're 7 days late on it. I don't think that they're that accurate with those kind of things.
Probably not.
Yeah. You might have just lost a little bit of carbonation.
I don't know. It just seems like a weaker porter taste than most of the other porters that I've had.
Yeah. Well,
but still pretty good.
You'll have to try a fresh one and review it next side by side. See what happens.
Well, if you're going to fly me to Oregon to try a fresh one, then.
Oh, well. All right. Maybe next time you're in Oregon. 3 years later. Oh, I'm in Oregon. I forgot to do something.
What are you drinking, Doug?
Well, since I said I am suffering from a bit of a cold, I went to the store and I saw the only thing that had fruit in the title of a beer. This is Traveler's Grapefruit Shandy, and it is 24 ounces of refreshment, as it says on the thing. Let's give it a taste, see what it's like.
Well, I'm glad you're looking after your health and introducing some fruit into your diet.
Yes, introducing fruit into the diet. This is actually really...
I mean, hops are technically fruit, right?
I think they're a flower.
Fruit, flower. How's your beer, Doug?
It tastes less like a beer and more almost like a fruit drink.
Is it like a dessert beer, maybe?
I would just add
some sugar to it.
I would classify it actually more as a kind of a hard beverage, Mike's Hard does different things. It's kind of like that. It's got a very strong fruit taste and then like kind of a beer aftertasty kind of thing. Much more on the fruit side than it is the beer side. It's kind of more like a fruit juice brewed like a beer. But you know, it's interesting. I mean,
good for a change.
Yeah, exactly. It's a decent change up to the standard like Yingling lager.
You know, we should get some of these beer companies to sponsor us.
That would actually be a really neat thing to do, but I think we might be a little bit small for that.
Yeah, possibly.
Maybe. They need to start sponsoring the Magic Pro Tour before we can get them interested in us.
Beer company sponsoring the Magic Pro Tour.
A game for 13 and up.
13 and up, sponsored by Budweiser.
Please cast responsibly. All
so,
right.
Doug, I hear you made a Reddit post recently.
Oh, yeah. If anybody hasn't seen it, I'll put a link in the show notes to a hypergeometric calculator tool that I made the Desmos.com graphing calculator site. I saved it and everything. This is a tool that you can use for deck building and in-game statistics. And
the thing that I liked is that you actually made a tutorial for it and actually like broke down why you're putting the numbers in these certain positions.
Yes, there is a tutorial with that. I will link that as well. Going over it right now would take
too
most
long
of the podcast if we let it. But I will link to the Desmos page with the graphs and everything, and then also to the tutorial site on Imgur. That should help. If you guys want to hear more about it or have any questions about it, feel free to tweet at us or email us, and I'll be happy to answer questions. But
yeah, Doug handles all the social media stuff, so
yeah,
getting it from the horse's mouth,
right? But the horse's mouth usually has a foot in it, so
well. We try to look past these things. All right, so there are some spoilers that happened in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, so this week we are going to break form and talk about only spoilers. We learned from last spoiler season that trying to mix a half of a regular episode and then just kind of finish up with spoilers doesn't work at all, because we just end up blathering on about spoilers for the entire time.
Yeah, it just ends up going over by a half hour, and that half hour was when we were talking about decks, so just spoilers today.
Yep, and probably just spoilers next week. Don't worry, we'll be back to form eventually. The Teemer Ascendancy deck that I have, I've got a report on that one, and there are some other cards that I'm looking to brew around. One of them is a black card, which I don't usually do.
What?
Right? So you have
you
that.
You don't play Black and Magic.
That's like spoilers for the next in 2 weeks.
Weeks.
Yeah. So moving on from that, we go to Ixalan spoilers. All right, that's about enough hype. Okay.
So with the fall set comes rotation, and there are a lot of doozies that are rotating. So.
Yeah, let's actually do a format rundown real quick, just to get an idea of what's going on in Standard with the rotation, and what's coming up and what's going away. So, Standard metagame rundown, top of the list, we have Teemer Energy, Marvelous Marvel.
It's going to stay around because, you know, the energy mechanic isn't rotating this time around.
Yeah, it's Kaladesh block constructed, so they're losing some cards that are here that they're losing. Elder Deep Fiend, excuse me.
That's kind of a newer addition to the deck, but yeah, they are losing that. Otherwise, I don't see much else.
Other than the lands, Game Trail and Lumbering Falls are going away. That's not really.
We'll cover that later.
Yeah, and from the sideboard, Dispel, Radiant Flames, Tireless Tracker.
Wait, they're actually going to let Dispel rotate from Standard?
I
thought that was in the core set at this point.
Well, it might come back, but also we have Spell Pierce now. So that could be like the theoretical replacement. There always has to be at least one mana counterspell. Okay, moving on, we have Ramunap Red.
They're going to lose a few things, but not enough to knock it out, and they're also going to gain some stuff.
Yeah.
The biggest one, I can't see anything that they're losing.
The biggest one is Vulcanrath Gorger. That and Incendiary Flow, but at the same time that they're losing Incendiary Flow, they're gaining Lightning Strike.
Well, we'll talk about what things are gaining and losing.
Yeah.
Well, what things are gaining, we'll talk about what things are losing now.
Yeah.
That's why we're doing this segment.
Yep. Other than that, things like Warping Whale, Collected Defiance.
Right.
That's pretty much it out of Ramunap Red. So those aren't losing much. Moving on to Mardu Vehicles.
Draven Inspector. No.
This is the end of Thraben Inspector's reign of terror in Standard.
I didn't get to play with him as much as I would like.
And by reign of terror, we mean just a decent one drop. It didn't, never really.
I mean, it's the same as Thoughtseize's Reign of Terror in that it's not a great card, but it's still the best thing that you can do on turn one
Well,
in that
Thoughtseize is
color.
significantly higher power level than Thraben Inspector,
Right.
but
Also, Clue Tribal is going away.
yes, Clue Tribals are going away. Yeah, and this Shambling Vents leaving Needle Spires again. That's
And my boy Thought Not Seer.
oh right, Thought Not Seer is going away too.
He's still gonna be around in Modern, so you
Yep.
know, I'll still hook up with him now and then, but man, ever since this card was spoiled, I've been in love with this card.
Yeah, Thought Not Seer is such a great Magic card. It, especially when you can play him on turn two with two temples.
Right.
Fun thing to do. Probably slightly broken thing to do too, but yeah, you know. Oh right, hold on.
Anguished Unmaking is also rotating.
Yes, Anguished Unmaking, the new fixed
Just
Vindicate.
get rid of something at the cost of 3 life and 3 mana.
Get it out of here, Norton. All right.
And the big one, big Gids. Gideon, Ally of Zendikar, going
Yeah.
away.
Yep. Oh, and also Archangel Avacyn.
Well,
And Nahiri.
that's in a different deck.
Well, no, that's in Marty Vehicles.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Huh.
At least this version of it. This is a deck that changes all the time anyway, so it's like
Right. So
the main cards.
my thought on this deck is it might stay around, but it's definitely not going to be the same.
It might stay around mainly just because so many people have all of the cards for this that they'll just find replacements and keep playing it.
Right.
It's just because that's going to be on the cheaper side of, you know, things to do. But yeah, it is actually losing a few of the key pieces. But then again,
Speaking of losing key pieces,
Key to the City is not rotating out.
right. Well, speaking of losing key pieces, the next deck is Mono Black Zombies, and oh wow, look at how many things they're losing.
They up there losing Crypt Breaker, Relentless Dead, Diagraph Colossus, Grasp of, no, they're not losing
Dark
Grasp.
Salvation. Dark
Dark.
Salvation's a big one.
Oh right, yeah. I forgot that was, for some reason I thought that was Zendikar, but yeah, losing, that's a huge one. Not Westvale Abbey they're losing, which is kind of not
They are
really.
losing Grasp of Darkness. It was Oath of the Gatewatch.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so Grasp of Darkness is leaving.
So they're losing all of their removal spells.
Yep. Transgress the Mind is leaving as well. That's this sideboard.
Right.
And Kalidus, Traitor of Ghent, is their answer to some of the more aggressive decks.
To Ramunap Red, basically.
Yep.
And then in the list I'm looking at, they have a fun of Triska Decaphobia, which is also rotating.
It's unfortunate. We don't have to be afraid of the number 13 anymore.
Well, I never got there with the Triska Decaphobia deck, so
All
Tree of Perdition is also rotating. Womp womp.
right, I'm back. Okay, and the next one we have is Approach of the Second Sun Control, which.
Yeah, this is losing Blessed Alliance, which is a big thing.
Yeah, Blessed Alliance is one of their key cards in a lot of decks. It just keeps you alive so long. Immolarian Glare, similar to Blessed Alliance.
I'm not sure how many decks actually run Immolating Glare. I think this is just a one-off deck.
It's kind of an amalgamation of all the decks that have been running, so it's kind of like the best of
It's
all worlds.
Summary Dismissal, which is one of the favorite control sideboard cards, is going away.
Yep. Other than that, I mean, Port
They're
Town
not
and Prairie
really losing a
Stream.
whole lot.
Port Town, Prairie
Well,
Stream, and
but
Westvale Abbey.
they're gaining Westvale Abbey. Westvale Abbey is also going away. So the Monument decks are probably dead.
I don't know about dead necessarily, but I do think losing Westvale Abbey is a huge boon. I mean,
Between Westvale Abbey and Archangel Avacyn and Selfless Spirit, I think they're dead.
yeah. Descend Upon the Sinful and Sphinx of the Final Word. I open to foil Sphinx of the Final Word in a set with invocation or masterpieces.
Right.
I open a foil mythic Sphinx of the Final Word.
Hey, I opened a foil Hazareth Last Dance with Mary Jane. So.
All right.
You want to talk about bad luck?
Eh, fair enough. Fair enough.
And Descend Upon the Sinful. I've never heard of that card.
It's Descend Upon the Fisherman.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah. If you go off the French translation, that's the
right.
That's what you get. That's you're going away, but that's kind of being replaced by a different card. Or it could be replaced. Next up, we have a newcomer to the party, a blue-black control. This is your Scarab God deck, also running Torrential Gearhulk.
Well, any deck in blue is going to be running Torrential Gearhulk, and Torrential Gearhulk is going to be around for another year, so get used to it.
Yeah.
Caster Mage is here to stay.
The main things it looks like this is losing is Grasp of Darkness and Flaying Tendrils, and then some of the parts of the mana base.
Right, which, when we go over spoilers, I think there's some easy things that you can slot into there.
Yeah, yeah. The lands going away is kind of like a thing, but they are getting replaced. Losing the tapped man lands is something of a
yes, the man lands
is something a hit. Oh, Liliana, the Last Hope is also rotating out.
Right, the Bane of All Control decks.
Yeah, that's leaving, so that's a thing.
Yeah, she'll still stay around in Modern for a while.
Yeah. Next one we have on the list here is Green-Red Ramp.
Well, all the ramp targets are going away.
Well, yes and no, but all the Eldrazi ramp targets are going away, and Worldbreaker and Ulamog the Ceaseless Hunger.
No so more Eldrazi.
No longer can you ramp ahead to 7 to 10 mana and then just start blowing up your opponent's lands. You have to blow up your opponent's lands in a fair way with Demolish.
Ugh.
Or...
ugh, that made me shudder.
Hey, they made a cycling Demolish, so if it's not good in the late game, you can cycle it away.
Kozilek's Return is rotating, which will make the red decks better. It's one less damage-based sweeper.
Yep. Other than that, the only thing in here is Weirding Wood, which is just it's a ramp enchantment. It's not... and then, you know, Game Trail and that cycle. Seagate Wreckage is also rotating. And Shrine of the Forsaken Gods, which is actually a huge thing in this deck because that's a 2-mana spell.
Right.
Or a 2-mana land, I'm sorry. But only works if you have 7 or more lands, so... you know, it's a thing. But Tireless Tracker. Did we talk about that one yet?
We did not talk about Tireless Tracker.
Yeah, that's
I opened a Tireless Tracker. It was my Shadows Over Innistrad promo, I believe.
Yeah.
And when I started playing with that, I just fell in love with it.
Yeah, that's
it's so good.
That's such a great card.
And it's also sometimes played in Modern.
It is Modern playable, especially with fetch lands. It makes the whole thing just...
in the right deck, it shines.
I've seen it played in Ponza, so, like, that's...
yeah, Ponza's a ramp / LD deck, so...
green, basically, almost like a green-red tempo deck. You know, use one land destruction spell just to set them off balance and then, you know, ramp ahead. And start playing your 5 drops while they're playing their 2 and 3 drops.
Right. So the last deck on the list is Green-White Ramp, which is pretty much almost the same as Green-Red, but...
it's the same concept.
Same concept.
They're using
and
more...
it's still losing the Worldbreakers and the Ulamogs.
Yeah, they're using more enchantment-based ramp.
Right.
And controlling stuff. So yeah, so that's...
that's how Standard sits now.
With most of the top decks losing, if not major pieces, then at least some important pieces.
Right. Seems like everybody's mana base is going to get hit, but...
well, that brings us into the spoilers part, and since we have been talking about mana bases...
yeah, since we've talked about it so much, I guess we just have to mention... the cycle.
Yeah, the buddy lands are back. Stuff like Glacial Fortress, Rootbound Crag, the ally color cycle. So blue, white, red, green, white, blue, black, red, black.
Right. So, importantly, the cycle lands have basic land types.
So you can play turn one tapped cycle land into turn two buddy
Into turn
land.
two, untap buddy land.
Yeah, that's an important thing. These are all just like quality standard cards already.
Right. I mean, they're just going to be used in standard because they're dual lands that can come in untapped.
Yeah, and they get played in modern from time to time, either as budget substitutes or as just an additional untapped land if you don't if you're trying not to run so many fetch lands.
I mean, Dragon Skull Summit was up to 13 or $14 at one point. That was in the old Grishul brand days.
Well, and Glacial Fortress gets used in control decks
And
that.
blue-white control, which is pretty popular now.
Yeah.
Rootbound Crag sometimes gets used in Living End. Sun Petal Grove is not used as much. And Drowned Catacomb I've seen in Grixis and Esper decks.
Sun Petal is sometimes used in like the Boggles decks that are trying to be a little bit more budget.
Right,
But
but
yeah.
the Boggles decks would rather just have a fast land most of the time.
Well, yeah, they run the fast lands too sometimes. But it's a decent budget replacement for, Horizon Canopy, which is only about
Right.
$1 billion. It's like the playset of those is costs more alone than the rest of the deck combined.
Right. And they're like $80 a piece at this point, but they're gonna go down.
Yep. Yeah. Quick other thing. Unclaimed Territory, as it enters.
Uncommon Cavern of Souls.
Yes. As it enters, choose a creature type, add a colorless to the mana pool, or add one mana of any color, but spend it only to cast creature spells of the chosen type. So, yes, uncommon.
Yeah, if Cavern of Souls was downgraded to uncommon, this is what it would look like.
Yeah, it's just basically remove the creature spells of the chosen type can't be countered.
Right.
So it fixes you, but only if you're playing.
Hard tribal.
Yeah. As Sean just mentioned, we also have our Hasbro Iconic Masters spoilers. I think we have approaching the whole set at this point, or at least most of the important cards.
Yeah, so we're recording this on the 8th of September, the first day of HasCon. So everybody got their goodie bags, which have, I believe, six packs of Iconic Masters apiece. So pretty much we have most of the set, if not all of it. But
Yep.
that's not what we're gonna mainly talk about
Yeah,
here.
it's a sealed pool full of them. I mean, you can look at the spoilers yourself. They're all reprints, so it's not like we're gonna see something and go, "Oh man, I've never seen this card before." Well, we
Oh, we
probably
might.
will because we haven't seen all the cards ever. But
There's what, 16,000 different Magic cards, so.
my point is that like the weren't it's nothing. It's nothing new, and we could have already seen all these cards on Gather if we were looking for
Right.
such an effect. But we have a whole bunch of Ixalan things. We have about the first half of them, and we'll talk about. We'll try
In
and get
fact,
as.
we have 126 out of 279 cards.
Yeah, so a little bit less than the first half. And.
But most of the rares and mythics have already been spoiled.
Yeah, and I don't think they've given us the basic lands yet, so those are gonna be. That's gonna take up probably. What is
Right,
it? 20?
that will be on Monday.
Basic lands.
That will be
Okay.
on Monday the 11th.
Yeah, but that basically what I'm saying is that takes up about 20 cards in the set. So 279 is really 259, and at 126 we're very slightly less than half.
Right.
But all right.
Well, let's get into the main event.
Dive right into it. Sean, what's something you want to talk about here on this list?
Well, the first thing that jumps out to me right now is Jace.
Jace.
Jace, Cunning Castaway. One blue, three mana planeswalker is always good. Comes in with three loyalty, always good. So there's been a bit of rule change once this set drops.
A bit.
All planeswalkers, and all past planeswalkers now gain the super type legendary, and you can have any number of planeswalkers of the same type. So you can have any number of Jaces, any number of Gideons, any number of Lilianas on the battlefield at the same time. The Planeswalker uniqueness rule does not exist anymore. It's been incorporated into the legendary rule now.
Yeah, it's in the same way that you could have both of the Thalias. Like, the names still have to be different.
Right.
Like, you can't have two Jace Cunning Castaways.
So, but you can have Jace Cunning Castaway and Jace the Mind Sculptor on the battlefield at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Whereas in the past, you couldn't do that.
Yeah.
His plus one, well, as I said, he comes in with three loyalty. His plus one says whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player this turn, draw a card, then discard a card. It's okay. I mean, it's a three mana planeswalker, so it kind of has to be unexciting with the plus.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's so many stipulations on this. It's like, plus one, you have to have attacked with a creature and also dealt damage to a player, and then you don't just get to draw a card, but you get to draw and then discard. So it's like, it couldn't have just been a curiosity. It had to be, like, more than that, and it has to have, like, the discard clause. It's the plus one's really not good, especially for three mana. Especially also if you're attacking with people to get through damage just so you can loot, and then your Jace is undefended the next turn.
And also, Madness is rotating.
So.
So that just makes it less exciting. So you don't actively want to discard cards then.
Well, you do for other graveyard shenanigans, but the
Right.
Madnessing cards is no longer a way to use the discard clause.
His minus two says create a 2/2 blue illusion creature token with when this creature becomes the target of a spell, sacrifice it. Interestingly, when it becomes the target of an ability, now you don't have to sacrifice an illusion. So it's, I guess, strictly better than a Phantasmal Bear.
I mean, that's not saying too much, but yeah, I mean, it's saying something. It's a thing that can protect Jace, and it's fine. And I
And
always
it
found
can block.
the illusion clause as being almost irrelevant, just because in a normal case scenario, anything that they can target your creature with is gonna kill the creature anyway.
Right.
So having an illusion that says, "Oh, when this is targeted by a spell or ability, it's gonna die." Well, it was gonna die anyway, so that's not really that big of a deal.
And then his quote unquote ultimate minus five. Which is create two tokens that are copies of Jace Cunning Castaway, except they're not legendary. So this immediately takes advantage of the rule change in that you can now have two Jaces on the field at the same time, and they lose their legendary subtype, so now you have two Planeswalkers. And also, it only takes 2 turns after you cast this card to ultimate it.
Except the ultimate doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, Planeswalker ultimates are usually like an I win the game type thing. But this just seems like you would have to do it twice to actually start winning the game.
Yeah. Well, so let's say, so this combos with Doubling Season as all Planeswalker ultimates do. But
Right.
let's say even if you did have Doubling Season down, you play this, you minus
In
it.
fact, I think this goes infinite with Doubling Season.
It does. But the question is, what are you even doing? Because you play it, it comes in with six counters, you minus it, it goes to one, you create two copies, you minus both of them, you create two
Well,
more copies.
it goes infinite. You make infinite copies, and then you make infinite tutus.
Yes. And then they wrath the board or something.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about decks that make infinite creatures at sorcery speed on this podcast before, so.
Well, yeah, and there's also, like, that's probably a game-winning situation, but if you have Doubling Season out, there's
Plenty of
plenty
other
of.
things that you can do with Doubling Season than this.
Yeah, exactly. So, or you could, what would be another neat thing is, like, you go infinite and then you uptick all of them, and then
Right.
you
And then
discard
you
your whole
just
deck.
draw your entire deck and then discard your entire deck.
Yep.
Sculpt the perfect hand.
Exactly. That's, I mean, it's.
So importantly, that plus one ability is not a May ability. You have to do it. So you can't just say I make infinite Jaces, I do infinite plus ones, and then I attack you with a creature. Because then they can say, yeah, okay, I take two, and then you draw your entire deck and lose for not being able to draw a card.
I mean, you'd have to do it cleverly and be like, okay, I'm gonna make enough of them exactly equal to my library or more than my library, and then uptick all but one of them. But
Right.
that's a completely side note where that's you're being silly at this point.
Well, I mean, I just think it's interesting that usually effects like that says you may draw a card if you do discard a card, because they only want it to benefit you. They don't ever want it to hurt you.
Yeah, that's
But they've written it at on this current card as something that can possibly hurt.
Eh, I don't actually like 3-mana planeswalkers are always something to keep an eye on because they just sometimes break formats, but for the most part, I don't think that that's any good.
I
But
mean, you never know. 3-mana planeswalkers. I didn't think that Nissa was any good when she was spoiled, and she ended up being played in every green deck, so.
yeah, well, it's plus one abilities, or plus abilities and zero abilities that create creatures are typically really good, and minus abilities that kill creatures are typically pretty good. When it's minus to create a creature and plus one to maybe draw a card if you're lucky, eh, it doesn't have a real effect on the board.
Right.
But we
So
all.
this really just has to ultimate or do anything exciting.
Yeah, and even then, it's not really that exciting. You get two
Right.
more useless planeswalkers. But we do have two other planeswalkers that both create tokens as a plus or zero, and can kill things as minuses.
Right.
So let's talk about Vraska.
Vraska Relic Seeker.
It's a 4-black-green legendary planeswalker Vraska. Rah rah rah. +2 to create. It comes in with 6 loyalty. +2 to create a 2/2 black pirate creature token with menace. -3 to destroy target artifact, creature, or enchantment, and then create a treasure token artifact with tap to sack in this and add 1 mana of any color. Pretty much a lotus petal. And then -10, target player's life total becomes 1.
So this seems to me very similar to Vraska's first Planeswalker card, in that not the plus, but the minus three is very similar to Vraska the Unseen's -3. Except, it's not, you can't destroy a non-land permanent, it's just an artifact, creature, or enchantment, which probably 85 to 90% of the time is a non-land permanent that you wanted to destroy anyway.
The main thing is it doesn't hit planeswalkers, which that's the reason they had to put all those things in.
Right. And then the -10, I mean, you hit it, what, 3 turns after you play it, or 2 turns after you play it, 2 turns after you play
Three
it.
turns. It comes down at 6, and you plus it that turn, so it goes to 8. Next turn, it goes to 10. Third turn, it goes down to -10.
Right. And also the ultimate on Vraska is similar to Vraska the Unseen, in that you only need to do one damage to your opponent to kill them.
Yep. I think this is the closest we've seen any planeswalker come to literally just saying, I win the game, ultimate. With old Vraska, yeah, you got the 3 tokens, but they still had to wait until they could attack and then attack. On turn 3, or the third turn after you cast this, you will have at least two black pirate creatures tokens with menace, plus whatever else you've been playing. So you set their life total to 1 and just swing with the board, and maybe they can do something about it, maybe they can't.
Right. I disagree that, I mean, it is close to you win the game, but I don't think it's the closest to you win the game. I still think Jace the Mind Sculptor's ultimate is the closest you can come to you win the game.
What was that one again? That one's every time you cast a spell, they mill 5.
No, you exile their deck and then put their hand on top of their deck.
Ah, well, that wins the game in a less direct route. I'm saying this is like, at the point that you ultimate,
Importantly, combos with Rogue's Passage.
Yes, it does.
Or Gutshot.
Or Gutshot. Or Bolt. Or Bump
but you
in the
don't,
Night.
In normal constructed formats, you don't play a Planeswalker for its ultimate. You play it for the plus and the minus ability.
Yeah. And I think that
and
this...
I think that this has two solid abilities on it. I think it's a good walker.
Yeah. I would be surprised if we didn't see this in some sort of tournament Magic.
Right.
At 6 mana, it's a little risky, but some of the black-green decks do like going long.
Well, the black-white Sorin was also 6 mana, and we saw that running around for a while.
Yeah. It's
so
all play.
I think it'll work.
It kind of depends on how aggressive the format is. If it's super aggressive
right.
format all the time, then a 6 mana walker is going to, you know, you're okay, you make a 2/2 zombie or pirate. I swing with all my guys, you're dead.
And then I kill you by activating my Ramunap Ruins.
Yeah. All right. So the next Planeswalker on the list.
You got this, bro. I will defer to you for this.
I think the correct pronunciation is what? Me?
Yeah, the Warrior Poet.
The Warrior
the
Poet.
The Red Light Planeswalker from Ixalan.
And the reason that I was deferred to say that is because being a little sick, I have an excess of phlegm to be able to say her name.
Sure, let's go with that. So, this is a Planeswalker. Obviously, legendary Planeswalker. How'd that go again, Doug?
Sorry, I had to die there for a second.
What's her subtype?
Wait, hold on. Nope. Ran out of phlegm.
All right,
can't do it right now.
Well, her name is the subtype. So, she casts for 3 red-white, comes in with 3 loyalty, which on its surface seems unexciting. 5 mana Planeswalker, you expect it to come in with 4 or 5 loyalty, but she starts with 3. +2, you gain life equal to the greatest power among creatures you control. Still unexciting, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't really affect the board, and it doesn't protect your Planeswalker, especially since it only has 3 loyalty. And even going up to 5 loyalty.
Eh.
But then she has a 0 ability that says create a 3/3 green dinosaur creature token with trample. That does protect your Planeswalker.
It's also interesting that she's red white and she creates a green token.
That is interesting and something to keep in mind for Rivals of Ixalan, because she might get a second Planeswalker card that is red white green, Naya.
That's true. She could get that.
And then her quote-unquote ultimate, which is not really an ultimate, but more of a minus ability. She deals minus X. She deals X damage divided as you choose among any number of creatures. Creatures dealt damage this way can't block this turn. I think that second clause is what seals this.
So I think that this is an all-around good card, because it does basically 4 different things that are all things that you want to do. So life gain in and of itself is not powerful, and people have been under the impression that life gain is bad.
Well, life gain does not outwardly win you the game.
Life gain for life gain's sake is bad. Life gain as an additional effect to things is good. Lifelink on creatures is typically a good thing, just because you already want a creature. The fact that it has lifelink is just upside, and it's there to give you an extra bump. It's, you know, you're not playing it solely because of the lifelink, but the lifelink is definitely a good part to the card. The +2, gaining, just plussing her all the time isn't going to win you any games, but plussing her sets you up for the minus X and the zero ability to be quality uses.
Just to expand on that, I think when you play her, you just use the zero ability to create a board stall. Then once you create a board stall, you start plussing, and then once you have enough loyalty counters that you can take most or all of them off and make their entire board not be able to block, then you you take advantage of that and just swing in with everything.
Yeah. Well, and when I said she has four abilities basically, because her minus X is a two-sided coin. Because you can
Yeah,
either m
it
minus
can
X.
kill something or it can just ping something and make it not able to block.
Yeah, it can do one of the two things. And that diversified ability allows her to do a lot more things in standard than just what it seems on the surface. I've come around to her a lot more in the recent few days, just because I think all of these modes are really good, and at five mana, that's fairly enough competitively priced.
Yeah, I said coming in with three loyalty is not exciting, and it's not, but it's probably just for balance issues. If she came in with five loyalty, she would just be completely busted.
Or if she was four mana, she would just take Gideon's spot in everything,
Right.
which she probably will already, but that's not something we can really do much about. Okay, well, that's the Planeswalkers, at least as far as we know. I don't think there's going to be a fourth one, but you never know with Wizards these
Most
days.
likely not. I think there's going to be three in this set and two in the next set.
Well, what do we want to cover next? Do we want to cover.
What about the seven mana, the cycle of seven mana cards?
Okay, yeah, we can talk about that. You're talking about the first three that we have, which is Overflowing Insight, Boneyard Parlay, and Star of Extinction.
Right, and I assume there's going to be a white and a green one to go along with it, but.
I'm not sure if there's going to be, because the white and the green ones might just be seven mana creature, well, high cost creatures, like Wakening Sun's Avatar might be the white one,
Right.
and the green one might be Verdant Sun's Avatar. Actually, no, because there's a Sun's.
No, because there's also Burning Sun's Avatar and couple other ones to come, I guess, because I can't find the blue or the black one.
Or they might just be partial cycles, but, or like you
Or
said,
they
we
may
don't.
be completed in Rivals of Ixalan, who knows?
Yeah. All right. Well, let's start off with the seven mana sorceries.
Well, the first one is Overflowing Insight. Four blue. Seven mana. What does it do, you ask? Well, target player draws seven cards.
I mean, it's kind of restricting mana cost.
It's a very restrictive mana cost. It's going to be very hard to hit in pretty much any deck. But anytime I see those three words on a card, I just want to try to play it. Have you
Now,
ever drawn seven cards in a game of Magic? It feels so good.
Sean, I draw seven cards in every game of Magic, and then I put them back and I draw six.
Right.
And on
How
rare
good
occasions.
does it feel when you draw seven cards?
Feels great until I look at them and there's no lands. And I put them all back and I draw six. No, I think this is a card that you don't just put in your deck lightly. You need it.
No, I don't think this is a card that you play in Constructed. I don't even think it's a card you play in Limited.
It's a card you play in Commander.
It is definitely a card you play in Commander because Omniscience is in Commander.
And this, you might hear us say this a lot over listeners over the course of this set. A lot of these cards seem like they're very commander focused, but
Right, just high mana cost, high, super high impact stuff,
big splashy effects. But yeah,
but mostly just high mana cost cards.
Overflowing Insight, there's a lot. If you're in a deck that can cast a seven mana sorcery, you're in a deck that has much better ways of winning than drawing seven cards. Unless your
Right.
win condition is literally the more cards you draw, the more you win. Let's say a deck with like the Locust God, where drawing
Right.
seven cards all of a sudden.
All of a sudden you have 7/1s.
Yeah, exactly. And it does kind of curve from the Locust God. Locust God on six, Overflowing on seven.
Well, but you still need to have the red mana.
But I mean, it's only three blue, and if you're in just a blue red deck, yeah, you pro and you have seven lands out, yeah, you can
Yeah, if
probably pay three of them as blue.
you're in a constructed blue-red deck, you can probably easily hit four blue on turn 7. That said, I don't think I'm ever gonna play this outside of Commander.
Yeah, probably not, but it's still a neat card to have around.
Right. So the black part of this cycle is Boneyard Parlay. Five black, little easier to cast. Exile up to five target creature cards from graveyards. An opponent separates those cards into two piles. Put all cards from the pile of your choice onto the battlefield under your control, and the rest into their owner's graveyards. So this just seems like too much of a setup cost to me.
Factor reanimate.
Factor reanimate. But how many times? Now it does say from graveyards, so you can use your opponent's graveyard for this.
So,
But I
in
don't know, just seems.
seems slow and clunky. You'll probably get two or three creatures on average.
You'll get either two super high impact or three medium impact creatures. Unless there's one that you absolutely really need on this board state, then you're gonna pick the three creatures.
Or you'll get one creature that wins the game.
Right.
But for 7 mana, I mean, we're t still talking about a standard that has Ramunap Red as one of the main decks. Like, it's not gonna get hit too hard. It's got a lot of fast decks like zombies. Zombies is gonna get hit pretty hard, but there can still be a lot of mid-range power, which is not going to allow for a 7 mana spell. I mean, in control decks, like in the Scarab God deck that we talked about, this might be a sideboard option for against a control deck. But if it's against a control deck, then there's probably not that many creatures.
But the Scarab God can just reanimate those creatures, and they come in as 4/4s.
But you can,
For what, 4 mana, I believe.
well, 4 mana after you cast it for five.
Right, but still, you're not gonna wanna run a 7 mana sorcery at that.
I mean, you could. That's what I'm saying. Is like that could be another option. You probably wouldn't, but if you have the time to do this, it's a very powerful effect.
But you know where this slots in? My Mimeoplasm deck.
This is also true. Your Mimeoplasm deck does have a propensity to want creatures in the graveyard.
It has a lot of high mana cost, high impact creatures, and you know, if I'm gonna get three of them on the battlefield at the same time, yeah, get in there. So the last one that we know of at this point is Star of Extinction, which is five red. For a sorcery, destroy target land. Star of Extinction deals 20 damage to each creature and each planeswalker.
Well, here's your land destruction for the set.
Right, yeah.
Every set's got to have its land destruction spell.
Yeah, I mean, Stone Rain's come a long way since its, what, alpha days.
I mean,
Went from two and a red to three and a red to three red, and now five red.
there's a few lands in the set that you might want to blow up, but for 7 mana.
For 7 mana, they've already done their damage.
But also 20 damage to each creature and each planeswalker. This is the Tunguska Bay Meteor Extinction.
Right. This is the Tunguska event.
Which is super flavorfully and awesome, but
Well, the Tunguska event happened in 1908, so I mean
no, that not the Tun the what's the
the Yucatan.
Yucatan Peninsula, that's the one. The YT boundary, if you will.
Right. So 20 damage to each creature and each planeswalker. That will kill basically anything. Won't
Except
kill Emrakul, won't kill Progenitus, but it'll kill basically anything else.
why wouldn't it kill Emrakul?
Because it has protection from colored spells.
Oh right, Well, it also doesn't kill any of the gods because they're indestructible.
Right.
Realistically, Hour of Devastation is still just better.
Yeah, it's cheaper, and 5 damage is usually enough. There's no reason why you would ever need to do 20 damage.
But you can do 20 damage now if you would like to.
And you also destroy a land, because you really didn't need your opponent to have a Maze of Ith.
Or a Gaia's Cradle. Speaking of Maze of
Speaking
Ith
of
and Gaia's
Maze
Cradle.
of Ith and Gaia's Cradle. So there seems to be a slight theme of thing of so Transform is back in this set because people like Transform. So there seems to be a slight sub-theme of other permanents just transforming into lands.
Oh, yeah, everybody likes double-faced cards, except for the people who enjoy white sleeves.
Except for the people who want to play in clear sleeves.
Basically, what we have so far is what looks to be going to be a cycle of legendary enchantments that all flip into a land, and then we have a few artifacts that flip into lands.
Right. So, well, let's just get it started.
Let's talk about the big one.
Well, yeah.
Growing Rites of Itlamok. Two and a green, legendary enchantment. When Growing Rites of Itlamok enters the battlefield, look at the top four cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. At the beginning of your end step, if you control four or more creatures, transform Growing Rites of Itlamok.
So let's just talk about the front part of this card first.
Okay.
So it comes down and basically it's Oath of Nissa, except it can't get you lands and it's also 2 mana more expensive. Seems medium.
On the front,
But wait, there's more.
on the front half, it really doesn't do enough. And if that was all the card did, then it would be stone unplayable, even in limited. However,
But wait, there's more.
Itlamok, Cradle of the Sun. Tap to add green to your mana pool, or tap to add green to your mana pool for each creature you control.
So it's Gaia's Cradle that taps when you don't have creatures.
Yes. Yeah. The land
So
side.
strictly better Gaia's Cradle.
It's. This is. This land is broken in all sorts of ways. And the fact that you have to have four creatures already means. But for the flipped condition to activate.
Means it immediately taps for 4 mana. If only there were 4 mana instants in green that you could cast right away with this.
So you flip it, and then it's an untapped land. So you just Ko-Ko into whatever you want, and then next turns you just now you have access to six
Now you
mana.
have at least, now you have somewhere around 6 creatures. Or you, ideally, you just wait until your opponent plays a board wipe, float your mana, let the board wipe resolve, and then play Ko-Ko.
You can
Or
do
Port of Calling, or.
it. Insert big green X spell here.
Yeah.
This is a huge effect, and the fact that it's like, so it's not straight Gaia's Cradle, and probably won't see much or any legacy play, just because it does have a fair amount of things that it's asking from you.
It does have a fair amount of setup cost, but imagine if you have one of these and a Gaia's Cradle out at the same time.
No, that's perfectly fine in fair magic. I don't think that they're actually gonna play that. They might play one or two of them in Legacy Elves.
I think it's gonna at least be tried. But I think I agree. Ultimately, they'll just cut it because, Gaia's Cradle is just better. Because you can just play it, get the immediate effect, and.
The main issues that I see with this one are, well, the main issues about its power level is that you're already asking green to do a lot of the things it already wants to do, and that is play creatures, ramp mana, and develop a decent board state, and then now you just flip this, and you have all the mana to do even more broken things.
Right. Basically, you're ramping yourself almost on the level of Tron ramps itself.
But also it's kind of asking, like, you need small creatures to flip it, and but then you need big creatures to utilize it. So that is a thing, but all you really need is an X costing payoff spell, and you're golden.
Right, or even just a big dumb green thing. You don't even need an X payoff spell.
Like, on the turn that you flip this, let's say it's turn four, you have four lands and four creatures. Now you have four lands and this
Yeah,
land.
now you have 4 lands plus a land that taps for 4 mana.
Yeah, so you have
So
access to 8 mana.
Yeah, you're going from 4 to 8 mana very quickly.
Assuming none of those were mana dorks, which is also
right,
something that could...
Which brings me into where I think this card's home will be, which is Modern Elves.
Mm-hmm. I think Modern Elves, I can think of a green-white token strategy where you have Secure the Wastes.
Right, yeah.
Nissas and whatnot. It just being able to play this spell, this land at all in any deck is just going to be amazing and very powerful.
I think it'll just turn a weenie deck or a token deck into a big mana deck.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what Gaia's Cradle does to elves in Legacy.
Yeah. And then all you need is some way to get Craterhoof and bam, you win.
Well, Green Sun Zenith is banned in Modern.
That's okay, we have the Convoke War.
And apparently will not be unbanned anytime soon.
What's the Convoke one? Court of Calling? Yeah, you can court
a... Court of Calling, yeah, you can...
Court out a hoof. I mean, that's
now
an option.
Yeah, but that costs 11 mana, not 9 mana.
That's completely fine. It'll tap for a lot more in the token strategy. I'm thinking I'm definitely building green-white token hoof.
Yeah. And even if you draw it and you can't court it, then you can just cast it because it's 8 mana and...
Well, you can also Summoner's Pact for it. It's a green creature.
Right. And it will win you the game pretty much on the spot, so...
Yeah. So you don't need to worry about the trigger. But you don't need to worry about the trigger anyway because you have a land that taps for 1 billion mana.
Right.
Let's move... That's... We can gush about this one all day, but let's move on. Alright, so next up is Argyle's Bloodfest. How do you pronounce that?
Argyle's.
Thank you.
I think it's Argyle's, but it's just spelled really weird. There's a lot of names that are spelled really weird in this set.
Yeah, and it's Bloodfast, so not Bloodfeast.
Right, because... Argel is a vampire, and he's fasting on.
Yeah. So this is a 2 mana, 1 and a black legendary enchantment, with 1 and a black, pay 2 life, draw a card, and then at the beginning of your upkeep, if you have 5 or less life, you may transform Argyle's Bloodfast.
All right. So I would just play this as a 1 and a black enchantment, 1 and a black, pay 2 life, draw a card.
Yeah, greed seems perfectly fine.
Right, but wait, there's more.
Temple of Atlantis.
I believe that's what Atlantis is called in this set.
Aklazots?
I don't even know.
Atlantis? Okay. Temple of Atlantis is a legendary land. Taps to add black to your mana pool, or tap and sack a creature to gain life equal to the sacrificed creature's toughness.
So... The obvious thing that you go to when you see a free sacrifice effect is that, oh, is Aristocrats back?
Well, it's not free.
Can you build Aristocrats?
It's not free. It does cost the tapping of this mana.
It does cost you having to go to 5 or less life.
That too.
Which is a real cost since, you know, mono red's in the format.
Yeah. Well, and plus, there are other free sacrifice outlets. But I think that this one is actually one of the few ones where you want the front side more than you want the back side.
Right.
But the back side's just going to get you out of a jam.
I think the back side just turns into life gain. I don't think that... Especially with Zulaport Cutthroat rotating. Like, that was a big Aristocrats payoff.
Yeah, I think if there is a... Even against an aggro deck, you kind of can draw a lot of cards at like, their end step, and then on the turn where you draw the card where you have 5 or less life, then you untap and then just start sacking out creatures for good effects and gaining all your life back.
Right.
You know, it doesn't take too many activations of Temple of
Alcatraz.
Sure. Before you're back up to a safe life total. Gain 5 life from a 4 or 5 or something, and then
right.
You know, now you're at 10, do it again, you're at 15. you have to be casting spells, obviously, but you're wanting to do that already. And you have a handful of action at this point, so there's
And presumably, when you have 5 or less life, you're gonna not need this for the mana. You're just gonna need it for the life gain.
And even at other points, even if you draw this late, it comes down, and if you're at 5 or less life, well, it's during your upkeep, so you need to like survive a turn cycle. But still, coming down late, and then all of a sudden, now you can just gain life at random. Like we said before, life gain in and of itself isn't good, but life gain with other things is good. And it's this is a situational card where, if you're in the situation, you aren't going to be unhappy for the effect.
I'm just happy with the front side effect. I'll do one in a black, pay 2 life, draw a card all day, every day.
Same here. Like it's greed, which is, for one more mana on the drawing part, but 2 less mana on the casting cost. So
Right. And it can just sit there and do nothing for a while if you want it to.
yeah.
You don't need to be hitting yourself to draw cards.
No, but it's good to have the option.
Right.
All right, so the last one in the legendary enchantment cycle we have thus far is Search for Azcanta. Asanta?
I think that's what they call Atlantis in this set.
You said that about the last one. They can't all be Atlantis, Sean.
Well, they are all Atlantis.
Fair enough. You want to give this one a read?
Well, I think this one is actually supposed to be Search for Atlantis because it's blue. And
Okay.
it's flavorfully searching for Atlantis. So it casts for one and a blue. At the beginning of your upkeep, look at the top card of your library. You may put it into your graveyard. Then if you have 7 or more cards in your graveyard, you may transform Search for Atlantis. So on the front side, at the beginning of your upkeep, scry one, basically.
That's perfectly reasonable.
And then once you hit threshold, it transforms. And would you play a one in a blue enchantment that just said at the beginning of your upkeep, scry one?
I'm not sure. I think I would. I think that other cards that have done this, similar type of effect, for more mana, I've played in limited, and those have always seemed good. This being kind of a similar thing. You look at the top card. If you need that right now, you take it and you leave it on top. And if you don't, you put it back on top, or you put it in your graveyard and keep working towards the flip condition.
So the payoff for the flip condition is Azcanta the Sunken Ruin. It's a legendary land. Tap to add blue to your mana pool. 2 and a blue and tap. Look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal a non-creature, non-land card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order.
Yeah, seems
I think where this slots in the best is in a control deck, where you have not a lot of creatures, or in some cases that we've seen in standard recently, not any creatures.
it could be that, or it could be part of a combo deck where you're looking for a specific piece, and the front side lets you look for it. Helps you look for it naturally, and then the flip side allows you to really start digging deep for it.
So it becomes a peer through, it com becomes a repeatable peer through depths. And that said, I'm definitely gonna try this in Ad Nauseam, but I don't think I'd ever play more than one of them.
And that's fair enough. It does kind of, for what your other card costs are in Ad Nauseam, where they're just one blue for, look at the top two or draw a card and scry two. It
Right.
doesn't it's a worse rate than those, but becoming a land helps that as well. And the being able to instant speed at the end of your turn, just all right, let me tap four to
Let
look at the
me
top
look for
four.
an ad nauseum real quick. Oh, was it not in the top 4? All right, I'll just ship these to the bottom and draw one, see if it was in the top 5. It really just lets you rip through your deck.
Yeah, it lets you go really deep, and it's not very quick, but it is very very efficient in the fact that the first half allows you to do it, for one card a turn, but for free, and then the other half of it is 3 cards a turn for four, basically, or 4 cards a turn.
Right. So this in a standard environment probably goes into either blue red or Nikki B control, because a lot of times in that deck you're just keeping up mana and you just have nothing else to do with it. So this is a repeatable Supreme Will in that deck. I mean, it can't let you get a Torrential Gearhulk, but it lets you get basically any other card in your deck.
Yeah, no, I like it, and I'm excited to put it in some decks. I think it might be good in a prowess deck, possibly, just to allow you to kind of filter your draws in a deck where you really don't want to be drawing extra lands. Also, it being a non-creature spell on its own, really, it helps that. And just being a card that lets you filter through a lot of your deck fairly easily is always good.
Yeah.
Let's move on towards the
Let's do the
artifacts
artifacts, yeah.
that are part of this cycle. We'll start left to right. This is Thaumatic Compass.
Yeah.
I think that's how you pronounce it. Thematic.
Pretty sure that's how you pronounce it.
Traumatic Compass. On the front half, it is literally Journeyer's Kite. 2 mana artifact, 3 and tap it to search your library for basic land and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. At the beginning of your end step, if you control 7 or more lands, transform Thaumatic Compass.
So, on the front side, this is, like you said, it's exactly Journeyer's Kite, which, even in Kamigawa, even in its limited environment, was not exciting.
Yeah, it's not exciting. It's not bad in Commander if you want to make sure you're ramping and hitting your land drops, which is something you always want to do in Commander. It's a fine playable, and you usually run it in your decks. But what it transforms into is Spires of Orazca. Orazca?
Yeah, sure, why
Orazca?
not?
Orazca? Orazia? Maybe. But this one is not a legendary land, but is tap to add 1 mana, add a Wingding to your mana pool, or tap to untap targeting attacking creature an opponent controls and remove it from combat.
Right,
So,
so it's Maze of Ith that taps for mana.
yep. Can't hit your things, so you can't protect your stuff.
Right. And Maze of Ith, I believe, does, yes, can save your stuff.
Yeah, but still,
So,
Maze of Ith.
most of the time when you're playing with Maze of Ith, you want to just fog one creature on your opponent's side of the field.
Yeah, well, and it's usually just like this creature's gonna just keep hitting me and kill me,
Right.
so I want that one to stop doing that, please.
But at a certain point, they just stop attacking you with that creature because you have a Maze of Ith and you're just gonna remove a creature from combat. But this has the upside, I guess, of also being able to tap for mana.
Well, it's kind of the so Maze of Ith. I think the number of times Maze of Ith has prevented attacks solely because it's sitting out on the battlefield is greater than the number of times it's actually activated to remove a creature from combat.
Right.
So this is a huge just threat of activation, and is, it's very powerful in what it does. I think the main drawback here is at the beginning of your end step, if you control 7 or more lands.
Yeah, 7 or more lands is a big setup cost, even in Commander.
Well,
In Commander, you're usually getting mana from your mana rocks. You're getting brown mana usually.
yeah, and
I mean, it does help you get to that point, but it's very slow.
I think this is a Commander card. Primarily, I don't think you're ever gonna play this in Standard just to get either the Journeyer's Kite effect or get up to 7 lands to get a Maze of Ith.
I don't think in 60 card you play enough basic lands to actually make this a self-fulfilling flip.
Well, not in Modern, but in Standard, yeah, you will play seven or more basics on typically. But yeah, I think it's really cool. We'll have to see if it actually does make any waves.
Right, next on our list,
Speaking of making waves, next up we have Conqueror's Galleon.
Conqueror's Galleon. I mean, this just that name alone, I want to play it. I mean, Conqueror's Galleon, like, that's a sweet name.
It sounds like what Voldemort calls his money.
Well, I'm glad I'm 100 miles away from you, or I would kick you in the shins.
Am also happy of this fact.
But that notwithstanding, this is a 4-mana artifact vehicle that is a 2/10 with crew 4. When it attacks, exile it at end of combat, then return it to the battlefield transformed under your control. So on the front side, it's a 2/10 vehicle with crew 4.
Yeah, a big old dirt
Flavor
machine.
wise, absolutely, I'm on board. Pun. It is absolutely intended.
Yep.
It takes a lot of people to crew a ship, and a ship can't really do a whole lot of damage on its own, but it can withstand a lot of punishment. So, flavor-wise, yes, I love this card.
Also, the art's really good.
Yeah, the art's also super sweet.
But it does transform into something.
Transforms into Conqueror's Foothold, which is a land. Taps to add colorless to your mana pool. Or Wingding for 2 generic mana and tap, draw a card, then discard a card. For 4 generic mana and tap, draw a card. For 6 generic mana and tap, return target card from your graveyard to your hand.
So this is a dessert topping and a floor wax.
Absolutely. I mean, the backside of this just does it all.
Yeah. The main thing to remember about all of these mana costs for its activated abilities, all of them are basically one more mana than they say because you have to also tap this land.
Right. And
That
this lane could tap for mana otherwise.
being said, I think that the loot and the draw a card are the most powerful effects, with the return a card from your graveyard to your hand as being less impactful but
It
still
seems
very
like
powerful.
flavor text,
Pretty much.
but I play a deck in Modern that can completely take advantage of all three modes.
Oh, yeah,
This is
right.
Mono Blue Tron.
But you don't have the creatures to crew it. We'll figure
I can figure
that
that out later.
out later.
I want a land like this in Mono Blue Tron. It just lets you loot for 2, just straight up draw a card for 4, and for 6, I mean, it can be a much more expensive Academy Ruins.
Yep. No, that seems super sweet, having this on the battlefield. And if there's even one card that gets printed in the next forever and a half that just says like, "Hey, one mana, transform target permanent." Okay, it breaks all the things.
Right. Or
But
like all permanents on the battlefield transform or something like that.
yeah. And I think there are things like that, but they only transform all humans, which is
Right.
unless you make this Unless you like crew this up and then change its subtype to human and then cast that, which I think at that point is more work than just actually attacking with it.
So going back to the front part of the card for a second, I asked myself when this was spoiled, why does it do the origins flip condition, and why doesn't it just flip? Well, you see, when you attack with it,
It's
you're
tapped.
gonna have to tap it,
Yep.
and they want you to be able to use it right away as a land.
Yeah, that does make sense.
Also, look at that butt. Oh my God, Becky, look at that butt.
That's 10. That's half of the Law and Order stats.
That is half of the Law and Order stats.
And kind of like a misnoted Law and Order stat. It's a 2/10 instead of a 10/10. But yeah,
Right.
no, that
Well, Doug's bad jokes notwithstanding, let's move on to the next artifact land flip card. Primal Amulet. What does Primal Amulet do, Doug?
Oh god, it's 4 mana for an artifact, and instants and sorcery spells you cast cost one less to cast. So, that's never been taken advantage of in any format
Yeah,
ever.
not at all.
Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a charge counter on Primal Amulet. Then, if there are four or more charge counters on it, you remove those counters and transform it. So,
So, on the
yeah.
front side, it is Thing in the Ice.
Yeah, kind of, except it makes your
Thing in the Ice
instances.
plus Barrel,
Yeah.
but it doesn't block at all.
No. And yeah, again, I can't think of any deck that would want to cast a lot of instants and sorceries in a turn. I'm just completely blanking on this one.
Well, I mean, I know what deck you're thinking of, and there's a reason why it won't work. But let's go over the backside of the card before we get into that.
Primal Wellspring. It's a land, and tap to add one mana of any color to your mana pool. When that mana is spent to cast an instant or sorcery, copy that spell, and you may choose new targets for the copy.
I mean, seems pretty decent.
Yeah, no, that's like a super powerful effect that you always want in any kind of Spellslinger deck, and it's something that Pyromancer Ascension.
Yeah, so it's a more expensive Pyromancer Ascension, but it also basically staples on the Goblin Electromancer effect. Like, it's a Goblin Electromancer on the front side, and then it becomes Pyromancer Ascension on the other side. So, I think it could work if Pyro Ascension was still a good Storm deck.
Well, I don't think it necessarily needs to work in Pyromancer Ascension. I think it could be almost a card in a red, like a red burn deck in standard. I mean, we'd need some more burn
Yeah, I
spells than
mean,
the ones we
this.
lost, but being
Well.
able to copy your spells, that'd be huge.
Yeah, but you need to. The setup cost, I think, is very prohibitive. First of all, it costs 4 mana.
That's true. It costs 4 mana on the
Red
front half.
decks don't really want to have like a 4 mana do nothing thing.
Yeah, and red deck was probably a bad example, but I don't know.
Well, let's do the good example then. You were saying if only there was some sort of deck in some sort of format like Modern that wants to sling a lot of spells. Well, the problem with that, the problem with just slotting this into Storm is that they want to turn one cantrip, turn two discount, turn three go off. They don't want the game to go past turn four, or else they're just gonna lose. If you cast this on turn four, it's a turn four do nothing.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, I think that the 4 mana cost might be prohibitive. Like, we saw Pyromancer's Goggles, which was a similar effect. That was in standard for a little bit, and it never really did
It
what we
was
thought it
good
would
at
be.
like one tournament
Yeah.
where someone just put all the fireballs into one deck.
And I think if we had a good fireball in standard, which I don't think we do anymore.
Yeah, I think
Most of
they're
them
all
rotated
rotated.
out. Yeah, but if we had a good fireball in standard, then it would be really powerful. Other than that, yeah, I like the concept of this, but it would need a lot of work to make really good.
Right. So maybe there's more instant and sorcery support in this set. Maybe they want you to make a standard spells deck, like we have the Drake that supports that. We have
You mean Enigma
expen
Drake?
yes, Enigma Drake. We have the expensive Kiln Fiend.
We don't have that anymore. That's rotating out. That was a Eldritch Moon card. I'm very
Wow.
sad.
That's unfortunate, but
Right.
we didn't really need that anyway.
This is true.
So,
Yeah,
anyway, this.
all the Spellslinger things from Shadows are rotating out, like Thing in the Ice.
All the non-Spellslinger things from Shadows are also rotating out.
That's what I meant, is all the creatures that are good in those kind of decks.
Right. So anyway, this is a prohibitive cost for essentially a do nothing for one turn, but if you can untap with this and you have a whole bunch of instant and sorcery spells that you can cast, it turns into like maybe there becomes a standard combo deck that uses this.
Well, you also have Baral, Chief of Compliance, in standard. So having both of those out, getting a 2 mana discount on your spells,
Right.
Like, that's huge gains.
I think you need more payoffs for, or you just need like a good fireball type effect that you can copy with this. So.
Move on to the.
I don't think either of us are really high on this card, but just keep it in the back of your mind.
It's really neat to have that effect, but like you just said, I don't think neither of us are looking at it right now and being like, no, this goes perfectly into XYZ deck. No, it's just like, it's really cool, but I don't see it being really good right now. And it's
Right.
like we said with all of them, it's probably playable in Commander.
So the next one we have here is Treasure Map.
Yep. This is the first card of Ixalan spoiled.
I believe so. Like the leaks notwithstanding, I believe this was the first official spoiler. So this is an artifact that casts for two. For one and tap, scry one, put a landmark counter on Treasure Map. Then if there are three or more landmarks on it, remove those counters, transform Treasure Map, and create three colorless treasure artifact tokens, which are Lotus Petals, like you said before. So there's a lot of text on this card. So the important part of the front side is one and tap, scry one.
That's not bad.
It's a little medium.
It's not
This is
good, but it's not bad.
rare, and if that was the only thing that it did, then I would be very disappointed to open this as my rare. But when it transforms, it create when you do that three times, and so if you play this on turn two, then you'll get this to flip on turn five, and then you get three treasures. So you just get three Lotus Petals.
Which
That ramps you a lot.
three lotus petals add up to what?
Three mana.
One black lotus?
One black lotus, yes. A black lotus has three lotus petals. So, I mean, it ramps you a lot when this flips. And also, it flips into Treasure Cove, which is a land. You can tap to add colorless to your mana pool, or you can tap and sacrifice a treasure to draw a card. Now, let me remind you, this gives you three treasures when it flips.
Well, I guess it asks the question, which do you need more, cards or mana? And giving you the option to have both, or have either, basically, allows you to, no matter where you are, you're either going to have action or have mana to play the action you have.
Given that this flips on, like I said, at least turn five, and it gives you three mana when it flips, I would say most of the time you're gonna need the cards first.
Well, you've also been scrying this entire time, so you probably have a good setup of things in your hand.
Right. Well, better than if you were just drawing random cards, but you could just get unlucky, and whenever you scry, you just always put it on top.
No, I mean, scrying is also a useful thing.
Scrying one is kind of unexciting. I think I only ever feel good when I'm scrying more than one.
That's fair. But scrying one is still at least looking at the top card of your library and, deciding whether you want that one or not.
Right.
Well, there are some notable reprints here. There's a lot more cards, obviously, in the set, but we are getting close to an hour or so at this point. So let's talk about some of the notable reprints real quick, and then we'll wrap this up, and then we'll be back to talk about more things next week.
Well, Favorable Winds is coming back. That's a reprint from Alara Block. One in a blue enchantment. Creatures you control with flying get +1/+1.
I really like this card, and
I
I'm.
like it as a card. It incentivizes you to play creatures with flying, even if like playing creatures that have flying isn't incentive enough. But it's kind of a do nothing.
Well, it's a lord that without a body, which
Right.
and
It's
it.
a lord that's hard to get rid of.
Enchantments are typically difficult to remove, at least game one, and sometimes game two, even if they only have like one or two enchantment removal spells in their
Right.
sideboard. So enchantments are good at dodging removal. Also, and being able to buff flyers is like you can just make a mono blue or blue white flyers deck, and you just keep slam and you slam as many of these as you draw, and this can give plus, it can give anywhere from like plus two for 2 mana to like plus X, where X is the number of creatures you have.
Right.
And
Well, if every creature in your deck has flying, then this is just a glorious anthem for 2 mana.
exactly, and we've seen Glorious Anthem in white for non-token creatures. What was that called? It doesn't matter. But yeah, we
Always,
always.
I'm watching you, Wazowski. Always watching.
Yes, that one. So they've been in standard for a little bit, but and this being one for flyers, it's like, well, that's a real reason to put together a flyer deck. That right next to like Stormfleet Aerialist, the one in a blue flying with raid enters the battlefield with a plus one counter on it for a 1/2, like a 3/2. No, it'd be a 2/3, and then with favorable winds out, it'd be a three
Three,
four.
four. Yep.
A 3/4 for two flying, that's really good. So I'd think favorable winds. Once the set's spoiled, I'm gonna make a favorable winds deck.
I think it's better in draft than it will be in either constructed or sealed or just any other format.
I mean,
That doesn't mean you shouldn't try it.
there have been things in modern that use favorable winds in the same way that, like Intangible Virtue.
Right.
Those are things that are playable. They're not always like tier one, but they can win a few games. You could take
Yeah.
down an FNM with one of them.
If all of a sudden you're casting 2/2 flyers for one, that becomes hard to deal with at a certain point.
Yeah. All right.
I'll let you do opt.
Yes. So we're getting Opt back, which, and by back I mean we're getting it back into modern.
Well,
We've not.
we're getting it from way, way, way in the past.
Yeah. This was last printed in Invasion.
Which is pretty far in the past.
Yeah. So we. This is a strictly worse Preordain,
I wouldn't say strictly worse.
but it
The
is an.
preordain's a sorcery. This is an instant.
Well, it's Preordain is still definitely better than Opt, but okay, Opt is a 1 mana blue instant, scry one, then draw a card.
Yeah, so you're giving up one of your scries and you're making it instant speed. Because you can't give up one of your mana because, can't have a free card that.
You can, it'll just be banned in modern
Right.
and restricted in Vintage.
Can't have a free card that draws a card.
Yeah, no,
Rip rope.
I think Opt is kind of just a neat piece to the puzzle that we're having in the 1 mana cantrip department.
I do like it as a 1 mana cantrip, and I think that it's a safe reprint. I don't think that it's gonna break anything, and I mean we've been talking about this, the implications for this in Modern all week, but I mean when it comes down to it, I think it's just an extra 1 mana cantrip, and if you think that this is better than some of the other 1 mana cantrips, then play this. If you think that the other 1 mana cantrips are better, then play those.
Well, and I still think Serum Visions is strictly better just because it goes so much deeper into your deck. But Opt it being 1 mana, and like the instant speed is kind of irrelevant because when you want to do this is, and like you can leave this if you play like an untapped blue black land, you can go, all right, push your mana dork or Opt.
Right.
That's the flexibility instant speed gives you.
So, and another thing is, I've been comparing this card to Sleight of Hand, which is a 1 mana sorcery that, when you think about it, does the same thing.
It does essentially the same thing, except you know what the second card is before you make the decision.
Well, but if you don't need the top card, then you're going to be taking the second card with Sleight of Hand anyway.
So the thing is that with Sleight of Hand you do get more information about what the second card is, And it's like, well, if they're both lands, you can take the land that would be more beneficial to you. You know,
Right,
where you
and
scry one, you see a land, you put that land to the bottom, and you draw like a worse land. You know, those kind of things where it's like it breaks the tie, but it's still not, what was I gonna?
they do almost the same thing, but they strictly do not do the same thing.
Right. That's what I'm trying to get at. And so I don't think Opt is going to replace anything necessarily, but I do think it's going to come in to places that it would have been, that might not have been playing sleight of hand.
I think I kind of want to try a Delver deck now with I think Opt is the bad replacement for Probe that Delver decks need.
Well,
Because mostly because you can just Snapcaster Opt on turn three if you don't have anything else to do, which is strictly better than having to Snapcaster Serum Visions on your turn.
And I think I'm gonna try and play this in Kiln Fiend and see where it leads.
Right.
You know, just having another one mana spell that draws a card is always good in that deck.
This seems like it's going to run into the same problems that you and I had with Peak,
Yeah, but
in that it costs mana and you can't just pay life, but we'll try it out and we'll get back to you.
yeah, we'll see what happens. What's our next
Speaking of
reprint?
blue reprints, Spell Pierce is back. I mean,
Yay!
we've said that a couple times. Spell Pierce is back. Always a good card.
Yeah, one blue instant counter-target non-creature spell unless its controller pays two.
Yeah, I mean it's an unexciting card, but most of the time whenever your opponent's playing a non-creature spell that you want to counter, they're not going to have two extra mana to pay for it. And also pairing this with Negate, then you just have the 1-2 punch.
Where you negate the first spell and then you spell pierce the second one.
Right.
And then it also works with, you know, with a deck that's playing Opt because, you know, you leave up your one mana, they
Yeah, you
don't.
leave up Spell Pierce mana, and then they don't play a non-creature spell, so you just play Opt.
Yeah. I think it's definitely got a lot of power. It, you know, I play it in sideboards and main decks in Modern. Like it's a good card and having it back in Standard is definitely a good thing.
It's good to see that they're still willing to reprint it.
Yeah, that it hasn't gotten to the power level where they're like, well, we're never gonna give you back Spell Pierce in Standard because it's too powerful for. It's like,
Right.
okay, like Lightning Bolt we're not getting back in Standard,
Oh no, not at all.
but
We didn't think we were getting Lightning Strike back in Standard for a while.
yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Speaking of which.
Speaking of which, Lightning Strike is in this set.
Yep.
1 and a red, 3 damage to face or creature. I mean, can't get a lot more simple than that unless you shave one generic mana off of it.
Yep. No, it's the best standard bolt that we've ever had. Except for
Yeah,
bolt.
I don't know how much standard you played during Theros and the early versions of Cons of Tarkir, but Lightning Strike was amazing.
Well, I mean, it's
And
bolt, but it's bolt for one more mana.
right, it's Bolt with the Thalia attacks on it.
Yeah. And it's interesting the experiment that's been done recently where we had Open Fire for the past 3 months, and even with a mono red deck being a primary
Yeah.
force in Standard, the 3 mana Lightning Bolt won't get played, but everybody loses their mind when the 2 mana Lightning Bolt comes back.
Right.
So,
Lightning Bolt is broken at 1 mana, good at 2 mana, and unplayable at 3 mana.
yeah, it's good to just kind of see that the comparison between the three in like real time.
Right. More reprints. Duress is back.
For us, with like super sketchy artwork, that
Oh,
dude.
this flavor text is also pretty savage. Solitude and starvation are brutal punishments, but even worse is all that time to think.
Right? He just looks like freaked out about everything.
Oh yeah, like it's well, it obviously it, the artwork suggests that this person was put on a lifeboat and set adrift.
Yep.
So, yeah. Duress, has always been a good sideboard card. I'm not really sure if you would ever main deck Duress,
And
unless you're in hard discard like Aatrak.
there are some decks that will main deck it just to get rid of some of the more like check, all right, do you have a kill spell or do you have a counter or do you have, you know, this, that, and the other thing? Okay, in order, like if they're a combo deck, they'll duress just to check to make sure the coast is clear.
Yeah, but I mean, in the formats where Duress was legal, you had better options. Thoughtseize and Inquisition are just better options because even if Duress just is so restrictive in what you can take.
I mean, it's a non-creature, non-land, so.
So if you play this against a snake deck versus Transgress the Mind, which just rotated, I mean, at least with Transgress the Mind, you'll be able to take something most of the time. With Duress, if you're playing against something like Green Black, where most of their cards are creatures, then you just get stonewalled.
But they might have a Fatal Push in their hand or a Grasp of Darkness. Well, I guess they won't have Grasp anymore, but they could
Well,
have.
they shouldn't in standard.
Right. But yeah, what I'm saying is they could just have a removal spell or like a Planeswalker or something where you can just be like, okay, that's what you're playing. I'm gonna get rid of that card that's not gonna be an issue for another 5 turns, but I'm gonna get rid of it now and I know what's going on, what to expect, and I can shape my game plan in order to deal with this. I don't
Right,
think.
and the information that you get from cards like this is also pretty valuable, but that by itself is just not worth a card.
Yeah.
If you can't make them discard a card with this, then it's probably not worth playing, which is why people usually relegate it to sideboards.
I think there's enough non-creature spells being played in most decks that
Especially with all the vehicles that are around.
Duress has enough of a utility in the main board that I wouldn't be surprised to see it in the main board, but I also wouldn't be surprised to see it in the sideboard. Yeah, just
Yeah.
looking through the top decks, most of them have like 11 or to 15 non-artifact or non-creature spells, with some being Approach of the Second Sun having literally all
Right.
and
And I
control decks.
mean, Duress is going to be a silver bullet against those decks.
So I wouldn't be surprised to see it main board. I wouldn't be surprised to see like a two in the main, two in the board split, but it's usually always in there. Anyway, I think our last we come out or are
I
we
believe.
counting Commune with Dinosaurs as a reprint since it's Commune with the Gods but with
And
dinosaurs?
also commune with nature. But yeah, let's count it. Why not?
I already brought it up, so might as well. Commune with Dinosaurs is one green for a sorcery. Look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may reveal a dinosaur or land from among them and put them into your hand, the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. Yeah, similar to Commune with Nature, which is look at the top five, reveal a creature or reveal a creature, and Commune with the Gods, which is top 5 cards, creature or enchantment, goes into your hand and the rest go on the bottom. It's like Ancient Stirrings too, where you have a colorless spell
Yeah,
card.
you just look at the top five, you try and find the one card that you need from that, and you put the rest on the bottom. I think most of the time this is just gonna be turn one, play this, find a land. This is gonna be the replacement for Oath of Nissa.
Quick thing I'm curious about is how many do you need in your deck? Okay, I'm just gonna use the hypergeometric. Okay, in order to hit one most of the time, you're gonna need about 10 or 11 targets in your deck and have not drawn one in the opening hand. Assuming you're playing this on turn one on the draw, you haven't drawn any cards. You need
Well,
about
if you're playing dinosaurs in your deck, assumingly you're playing 24 or 25 lands. So you're going to hit with this most of the time.
Oh, I guess it also hits lands. But yeah, if
Yeah.
you wanted to hit a dinosaur with this, you would need to hit 10.29 or like 10 or 11.
Yeah, between
In
pro
order.
so 10.29, you should probably always round up. So you would have to play 11 targets for this to always hit something, but it hits lands, so you're just always playing lands.
Yeah, so you're always going to at least hit lands. All
I don't
right.
know how many constructed decks this goes into, honestly.
I mean, if Dinosaurs is a constructed deck, yes, but other than that, probably not.
I think dinosaurs just cost too much mana.
Yeah.
And we haven't really gotten to say anything about the dinosaurs in this cast just because we kind of went on too many tangents with the other cards. But yeah. The dinosaurs, just as a whole, are very, very overly costed.
Yeah, all being at about like 6 or 7, well, most being at about 6 or 7. That's and with some ramp things, but for the most part, and we'll talk about the dragons next time. I think
Dinosaurs.
that's what I meant. And I think at a certain point, it's kind of like we kind of need to see the whole of the each individual tribe to be able to determine which a deck what deck can be built off of it. What they're doing with us now, because of the way standard's going to be. We only have two pirates and two vampires from previous blocks. So if there's going to be a vampire, pirate, dinosaur, or merfolk deck in standard at all, it's going to be an Ixalan block constructed deck, pretty much.
Right. Well, I mean, like you said, there's like three pirates in the last set and
No, there's two pirates
two pirates
total
in the last set.
in standard in the last in the Kaladesh block.
Right. And then
And two
I
vampires
mean
also in Kaladesh.
they've been printing vampires pretty regularly, so
Yeah, I mean vampires is a
I don't
tribe,
think
but
vampires just ever go away.
at least until January, like we're going to only have the cards from this set to build tribal decks around for the most part.
Right.
So how well we can build a dedicated deck is going to depend on basically how much Wizards builds it for us,
Yeah.
which
I
is
think the tribal decks could come together in a format like draft.
Yeah.
But in constructed, unless you have like enchantments that do and stuff like Metallic Mimic that rewards tribal synergy, then I'm not sure that tribal's actually gonna take off.
I'm not sure about it either, but we'll have to see. We have one more reprint I'm going to go over real quick. Slice and Twain, 2GG, instant, destroy target artifact or enchantment, draw a card.
And I'm not really sold on this yet.
Neither am I.
I think Dissenter's Deliverance is just still good enough.
Yeah, that's got cycling, so you can either. Like, this is. You
Yeah,
get.
so you get one half of that card for either one or two mana.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to have both halves for four.
Yeah, this I think this will be good. It might be playable in limited if there's artifacts and enchantments around. That's a good sideboard card. Other than that, it might be a sideboard card in like a maybe a green black deck that can't deal with artifacts or enchantments very well. But again, like you said, we have Dissenter's Deliverance, which is,
Yeah,
already better in green.
I think Wild Dissenter's Deliverance is in standard, then Slice and Twain's gonna kind of get pushed to the side. But when there will be a standard where Amonkhet doesn't exist and Ixalan does, I believe.
Yep.
So,
In about a year from now.
right. So buy them
And
cheap now, hold them for a year.
well, also, if we haven't gotten any more enchantment and artifact removal for the next year, then expect a whole bunch of artifacts and enchantments to come back into standard and break it again because Wizard didn't learn their
Right.
lesson. But yeah. All right. I think that's going to be enough for this episode. We did a whole bunch of them, but obviously not close to all of them. We'll come back next week and talk about some of the more interesting ones that we find. There's a lot of draft chaff, and there's some that are obviously good that we might not talk about just because this card is good and is going to be talked about for the next 3 months already. We don't need to harp on it.
If a card's good, we'll probably end up brewing something around it.
Yeah, or talking about it in the format rundown.
Right.
But yeah. But other than that, things to contact us on. Right. Hit us up on Twitter with questions. Ask me any questions about the hypergeometric stuff. Put
What's
that.
our Twitter handle, Doug?
It's BWBMTG. That's the same as the code for Flipside Gaming, where you can get $10 off orders of 10% off orders of $10 or more. Whoa there, Sally. And then you can also email us at brewingwithbrewskis@gmail.com.
Hashtag whoa there, Sally.
Hashtag well there, Sally. Yeah. Anything else from you, Sean?
Nope, nothing for me.
All right. This Traveler's Grapefruit Shandy, it was quite a refresher. Also,
Yeah,
that's what it.
I really like this Black Butte Porter. I was kind of digging. I was kind of bagging on the pale ale before, but the Black Butte Porter is actually pretty good.
Yeah, this beer, it has refreshing and refreshment all over it. And it's also very summer themed, and it's getting to September and windy and cold, so it's kind of funny.
So, I
But
mean, we have two seasons here in Pennsylvania, livable and winter.
with two transitionary periods, we're in a transitionary period. Yeah. So, also let us know. I'm thinking about seeing if there's more content we can do that would be easy to do, or not necessarily easy, but something I could do with my work schedule and or Sean could do with his. But let us know if you guys have any ideas for those kind of things. I think that's all for us. I've been Doug.
I'm Sean.
We've been brewing with brewskis this week. Good night, everybody. Cheers.